The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's weekly PlayStation show. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and today we're going to be talking about puppets. That's right. Liza P is out. This episode is up a little bit late so we can hit the embargo. Joining me to discuss puppets is Travis Northup, who reviewed Lies of P. Welcome. Thank you for coming on the show.
Long-time listener.
All right.
Happy to have you, man. You are one of the most prolific reviewers for IGN, and also, I think, probably the best-dressed reviewer. If for those of you listening at home and you can't see this, Brian and I are both wearing skull shirts like the bad kid from Toy Story. Travis is dressed like an adult man from a better time.
Yeah.
Brian's also here. Brian likes Soulsborne a lot. You love Bloodborne.
Puppets are great, I think. Yeah,
big fans of puppets.
Yes.
Before we get into it, just a heads up that there are some rumblings that there's going to be some kind of a Sony presentation, State of Play showcase, a Sony Nintendo Direct. I don't know what they're going to call it. But Tokyo Game Show is around the corner. Xbox announced that they're doing a thing. It seems very possible. So if that happens, we'll probably be doing something aligned with that. But we cannot give you any insight on scheduling because we don't actually know for ourselves. According to completely unhinged people on message boards, they're going to announce a Bloodborne 2 remaster, which...
What?
They say
Bloodborne 2 remaster?
Yeah,
they're remastering the game they haven't made yet?
It took so long to make it. They looked at it. They said, this is in 720p. We got to do something. We're going to fix it. It actually runs at 20 frames a second. So they're going back and they're pumping it back up to 30.
I'm so confused.
No, I'm kidding. There's the usual thing where people are like, they're going to announce a Bloodborne remaster or Bloodborne 2.
And at a Sony Nintendo Direct, anything can happen.
Sony announced by Xbox.
Yeah. Designed by Xbox. So the closest thing to a Bloodborne 2 remaster, why not, is Lies of P, which... it kicks ass.
Travis, yeah.
You gave it an 8. Like, this is definitely one of the... I feel like there's a expectation when something comes out that is very clearly FromSoft inspired that it probably won't be on par with FromSoft.
Yeah.
I think as far as something that is very clearly, cribbing from the FromSoft style guide, this is one of the best instances of that.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I would say, there's certain things that FromSoft is always going to have the edge on, and probably certain areas that you'll look at this game and go, okay, well, this is sort of does the exact same thing. But I would even say that there's areas of Lies of P that are better than FromSoft games have accomplished, namely the story, which they actually put time into cutscenes and dialogue and different endings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They feel a lot more substantial than.
Yeah.
A FromSoft game where it's kind of bring your own story, read item descriptions, environmental storytelling, which I have nothing against, but clearly this game focuses a lot more on the narrative, which gave me personally a lot of motivation to see it to the end because I was actually interested. Part of what I did for this review, because I'm a weirdo, is I went back and read the Adventures of Pinocchio book.
Genuinely appreciate that you did that.
Yeah.
Which, that's awesome.
I don't know if you guys have ever read that book. This is my first time. What a weird story. But it is super faithful to a lot of the stuff that happens in that. You meet a fox and a cat that are sort of grifter characters who are clearly untrustworthy and kind of get to decide their fate. They have the black rabbits arrive in a very different incarnation than they do in the original storybook, but it's very cool what they did with it, and I'm pretty excited for where this could go in the future, which I won't get into for spoiler reasons, but I think it is setting itself up to be a franchise, which I think is pretty cool.
Which, to backtrack real quick, this is a game about Pinocchio by way of Bloodborne, which on paper sounds completely insane. Not this year, but last year at Gamescom, although they were on our Gamescom show this year, they brought the King of Puppets boss to show us, which is awesome. Kicked my ass for an afternoon.
I think I spent like half a day on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the hardest I've ever seen my kid laugh at me was the second phase of that fight where something happens and just immediately just killed me in like two hits. And she was like, ha, 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 ha. And I was like, go away. The game is hard enough. But yeah, we
just rated M for go to your room.
we had them on our Gamescom live show last year. It was like the biggest game of our show. But also there wasn't a lot of people at Gamescom last year. We're in a lot of studios. And so just by the nature of being there, they were the biggest one. And we were all kind of like, are they the biggest game here? Because like no one else showed up, or is this a legitimately cool game? And we couldn't really get a read on it. It looked awesome. It looked like it played awesome, but we couldn't really tell.
I mean, it first showed up on Twitter, like it was clips of gameplay, which I feel like is so completely antithetical to like how AAA stuff is usually.
Yep.
And this is a South Korean studio.
NeoWiz. Yeah.
Which I've never heard of. I didn't even know what game.
I mean,
games they'd work
we're
on
seeing a lot more games coming out of South Korea lately, and it's awesome that you know they're clearly doing their homework over there. But like, again, unknown quantity. Like, we don't have any track record for the studio. We don't know what it's going for. It's very possible for a studio to cobble together a cool chunk of demo gameplay, pop it on Twitter, have it blow up, and then, you know, have that game disappear entirely.
Totally.
Or make a game that just isn't very good. And I think that there's a fair amount of skepticism that kind of came with this game because it is an unproven studio.
Yep.
Tackling a historically difficult genre, but also difficult to get right.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly it right there. And I feel like this is like the closest we've gotten to like kind of like a Bloodborne 1.5 or a Bloodborne 2. It doesn't hit the same highs in terms of like horror for me. The gothic horror specifically is a thing that has always attracted me to Bloodborne. But it gets enough right in almost every other category that I just feel like the actual feel of this game is fantastic. Like running around this world, getting into fights and scrambles and upgrading your weapons and your sidearm and stuff like that just feels awesome. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not big on steampunk in general. I feel like aesthetically, it's like one of those things where, you know, I have like a limit, and I feel like this and a game like BioShock does that thing where it hits that perfect limit of steampunk while also infusing enough horror that it scratches the itch for me.
Yeah, and it's also very clear that this game was inspired by Bloodborne specifically.
Yes.
Like, it's not a game where they looked at the Souls-like genre in general or Dark Souls or something. Like, the fighting mechanics are very clearly Bloodborne inspired. It also... aggressive gameplay is like kind of pushed on you, like you have to attack things to get health back when you block and that sort of stuff, which is really cool. And I think it also creeps into some of the world building as well. Like, you can see they were kind of going for like that same vibe of, you know, when you're in an area walking down dirty alleys and kind of like dead horses and overturned carriages. You're like, okay, I get it. Like, this is Bloodborne very
a lot of dead
very
horses.
Clearly.
Yes.
Really quite a few.
Really hammering it home.
Yeah. Really beat the dead horse on that one. No, I actually, like, I really loved exploring this world because I thought that, like, the more I uncovered, the more I really liked about it. It starts off with some pretty, you know, not super impressive, but like just kind of their factories and towns and stuff like that. And then eventually you start opening up into like swamps and like towers and all this really, really cool stuff. And they throw a lot of really creative bosses at you and a lot of different ways to approach combat. Like, I really like the mechanic in this game of you have this left arm. It's like this mechanical arm and you can swap it in and out. And the one I use the most is this thing called the puppet string, which when you start off, basically is, you know, Scorpion's get over here.
Yeah.
And then you dump a couple of like coils into it and upgrade it. And it's you do the opposite where you fly directly to them and aggressively land on them and just start beating the hell out of them. And like, you have to time it right in boss animations and with certain enemies and stuff like that. But if you do it right, like it does a ton of damage and it kicks into this whole other animation where you basically just like chopping their head off. And it's awesome.
It goes from Scorpion to Sekiro, basically.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you liken it to Sekiro, which I think is spot on.
And yeah.
It's interesting because like, that's much more of a pure action game than like a, you know, Souls-like. It's got some of the same trappings, but it's kind of cool to see some ideas from that lifted and mixed with Bloodborne and kind of infused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my favorite thing that this game does, which is a really tiny thing that I want FromSoft to steal back from this game, which has obviously clearly taken so much. By the way, I played the entire game with the donkey mask on.
Of course you did.
It was fun.
I was looking like a Castlevania character with like a cape and, you know, cloak and
hair. I got the cape towards the end and I love it. But the main character looks very much like Timothée Chalamet. So, you know, your mileage may vary on how much you like that dude. But for me, I really loved playing with the donkey mask on.
Of course you did.
The thing that this game does is your soul bucks or whatever, your Geppetto dollars, what do you call those?
Ergo,
right? Lights up when you hit enough to level up.
It is the
really cool.
It's a subtle little thing.
Most basic little change.
Yeah.
It makes it just, it is like the most subtle quality of life improvement. Like it is a color change piece of text.
Yeah.
That's all.
It. It also doesn't, I don't think it explains to you what the color change is doing, but you figure it out eventually.
Yeah.
There's not a box that pops up and says that's what it is.
No, it doesn't say like time to level up. No.
When it takes you like 16,000 ergo, you're like, oh, that's what that, I recognize it now.
No, I want to go into the sort of the details of the ways that it differs, but let's talk a little bit about your review first.
Sure.
Because obviously it wasn't just a, you know, mountain of praise. Like you had some kind of, you know, negative aspects.
Let's get some criticism.
What did this game do to hurt you?
Hurt me. I need to look up my my review to see what the specific of blocks were. Like, this feels like it was so long ago.
Well, one of the things you and I were talking about was sort of like how FromSoft games usually have tons of side content.
That's right. Yeah.
Specifically side bosses, like bosses that are completely optional, right? Bloodborne has a ton of totally optional bosses, and this doesn't really have that. There's like little areas you can do. There's puzzles and stuff like that. Definitely side quests that are, you know, interact with the character, or do this thing, or double cross this person, or whatever. But there isn't really a lot of like, hey, there's this one boss that you'll only find in this one thing. All the bosses are pretty much on the golden path.
You know, I talk about how much I love FromSoft for having faith that players will find that stuff.
Yeah,
and that is a really huge leap of faith for a developer to take. And I want to say that that's a thing that this studio will probably inject into a sequel.
Yeah,
if that it were to happen, or another, you know, another game in this genre. But it, you know, again, it's that is really, really trusting that the players are going to like your game enough to poke around in it and find new stuff. So
right.
You spend all this time, sink all this resources into making, you know, an optional boss fight that maybe people don't encounter is like, I feel like they wanted to put everything front and center for the player to really just kind of put their best foot forward. But yeah, I mean,
one of your other gripes was like the sort of like the abilities to build your character in specific ways, and how you were kind of hitting a wall with that, right?
Yeah, I pulled up my notes here just so that I make sure I'm hitting all of them. But yeah, the linear game design is definitely one of them, and that you kind of are going on the path. And even when you get to New Game Plus, they add some things, but you're kind of just replaying the same story again. I'm like halfway through my New Game Plus run with a different build. I respec'd and did all that before I rolled into the New Game Plus, which is kind of cool. You can do, and then the build crafting really does force you into a specific playstyle, which is one of my problems with Sekiro and Bloodborne. Is part of the Souls-like genre for me is that it's got a lot of RPG elements. This has some, in that you can build craft your weapon, which we'll talk about later. That's one of the things I like the most about the game is the weapon crafting system. But by and large, you are doing the Bloodborne formula of weapon and right hand, and your left hand is your utility item, more or less,
which
in this game I think is very clever that they turn it into like a Winter Soldier arm, which is kind of cool. Mega Man, you know, arm, where you can kind of turn it into everything. But it you know, in order to play this game effectively, you need to be aggressive, you need to be attacking, and that's a very specific play style. You're not going to be able to do ranged builds like a magic user in Dark Souls, or even really a defensive play style. Also, depending on which play style you choose, this game might be one of the easier Souls-likes or one of the harder Souls-likes.
Right.
If you do a technique build like I did, which is this game's version of dexterity, you basically have to learn to perfect parry. Like you have to get good a lot more than you would need to if you build into strength and motivity.
And the perfect parry is like a split second thing.
Perfect parry is really small window where you have to, basically, in order for me to beat a boss in my playthrough, I had to replay the fight a couple times and just kind of hang back and learn their moves and then get the timing down perfectly. And then you perfect parry enough and it staggers them. And then, you know, you can attack and eventually do your fatal attack and all that. When I did the same boss as the Motivity build, I was able to just run in and get a couple hits off, you know, one or two hits off with range, and then it would stagger them. Oh. And I'd hit them again and then they would open themselves up to a fatal attack, and you could just be way more aggressive and just wail on them. And it doesn't require you to kind of like replay and learn their attack, because you can just overpower them.
Yeah, and it's got that kind of Bloodborne system where like they can take a little health from you, but if you parry back, you return the health to yourself. Yeah,
parry or attack back. Yeah. If you in this game, you can also block attacks, which you can't do in Bloodborne. And when you block attacks, you take what they call guard regain, which is mm-hmm. you basically take the damage. It can even kill you. You can die from the chip damage, but it shows you a section of that damage that you can regain back. If you're on a strength build, you'll block like 70% of the attack, and then you can regain that all back with two hits. Mm-hmm. If you're on a technique build, your weapons block like 20%.
God, that's crazy.
So you'll actually lose most of your health, and then you'll gain like a small amount you can regain that you have to gain through attacking, but it's like, it's not worth it. So like blocking for me, if I blocked, you know, a string of three attacks without perfect parrying any of them, I'd be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you just have to like perfect parry.
It kind of funnels parry. You into that like yeah. stock hunter Bloodborne mode, and yes. less so like the Elden Ring wizard who's 50 feet away shooting lightning bolts. Like, you don't really have a magic build.
I mean, it's funny because I feel like to go for like Bloodborne, you know, that's approaching, you know, 10 years old at this point. Like, we're hurtling towards that. And since then, we've gotten, you know, Elden Ring, big one, huge variety of you know, play styles. More recently than that, Jedi Survivor, which does have blocking, you know, does also, you know, encourage an aggressive play style for the most part. But you also have like, I don't know, you have more range stuff. And it's kind of an odd thing to have. You kind of fall back into that Bloodborne muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, I constantly forget that I should be blocking, because at no point in Bloodborne should you be blocking.
Exactly.
You can't block.
Yeah.
There's
you have
one
a gun
shield
in that hand.
You find, and if you read the description, it basically is like, shields are for cowards. Get good. it's also bizarre because like, there's no ranged option, and there's no, you know, there's, it's, I, you know, it, it is encouraging that aggressive play style, but you also don't have, I guess you kind of have a gun in one hand. Like, you've got
you
your,
do. You've and
got,
you can actually literally have a gun.
Yeah, you can literally
one
get
of,
a
one
gun.
One of the arms is a gun, and it's good, but you can shoot it like maybe three or four times before it's out of ammo. And
what's cool about it is it will latch a bullet onto somebody that will then explode.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so cool. you can hit them and then roll out of the way. You don't have to worry about repeatedly hitting them.
And you can make it shoot really quick, where like you dodge. So I was using that for a while, just because I was so squishy, it was nice to get a little extra damage. Eventually though, especially if your technique build, the Aegis shield ends up becoming really powerful, because it's the only way that a technique build can block without taking a ton of damage,
right?
Not being able to, you know, actually guard it. So
that's
like a shield you hold out in front of yourself, and then it has like a priming time, and if it primes and they hit it the first time it gets hit, it'll shoot out an explosion out of the shield and do damage to the enemy. But you can also just use it just to like regular block, which is really nice if you're playing a technique build where you can't do that with your weapon.
It
takes a little extra time, but you can do it. So there's some ways around it, but basically the headline is, if you want to play hard mode of this game, you do technique build. And if you want to play the easy version, you play Motivity, which to me felt a little imbalanced. Like, my first playthrough, I did not know what I was getting into. I was playing a technique build and I was like, dude, this game's really tough in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, though, one area it's not really tough in, I don't know if you experienced this, Brian, because you're most of the way through the game now.
Yeah.
I never really died during the exploration sections. Like, to me, the exploring the world is pretty easy, which is sort of new in Souls-likes, where I'm used to dying in the world.
I was actually talking about this with Max this morning, about how this feels like the least cheap Souls-like.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of like very cartoon Looney Tunes deaths that happen in Souls games, specifically the FromSoft ones, where you'll turn the corner and like a ball will crush you, or like
you have some of that.
There's a couple of those. I found there was actually a couple of like not necessarily mini bosses, but just like bigger grunt type dudes that kicked my ass harder than some of the bosses did.
The clown.
That huge clown.
That clown
I hate
sucks.
That guy. Well, he also dances after he kills you and just mocks you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I use a lot of the, there's this just immensely rewarding, really satisfying animation in this game where you apply a grindstone to your sword, and you can get all different technique types. And one of the things, like we were talking about, like how the game does kind of funnel you into specific play styles. For me, It happened to be the play style that I usually play as, which is just like very aggressive, very in your face. Yeah. But I found that the where this game really shines is in its skill trees and amulets. And there's all these like little things that you can get, all these tinier systems to start kind of singing together and get really interconnected. I had a thing eventually where like I could apply multiple grindstones. And so like the skill tree basically gives you like these, you collect these quartzes and you dump the quartzes into the different like nodes. And each section of those nodes has like four different options. Mm-hmm. And you have to fill out two of them before you can move on to the next one. And every single one of those has a bunch of cool little perks.
Yeah.
And they start to really start feeling good. Like there'll be one where like it'll be like, hey, when you heal more, it actually increases your like your puppet arm thing, right? So like you're actually getting by losing in a battle, you're increasing your health and your sub weapon at the same exact time.
Yep.
And so I had a bunch of things where like a guy would kick my ass and I'd be like, oh yeah, good. Like now I'm stronger in two categories. And so like, I really loved all that stuff. And I had like all these amulets and one of them was like giving me extra health, extra stamina. I had four amulets going at the same time, which are basically like the rings that you wear.
Yeah.
Then there's like a weight system, obviously, like all these games have. And so there's a whole bunch of different push and pull, and I just found like I had a lot of fun just experimenting with different sub weapons and different combinations and seeing like what worked best for me.
It's a lot of customization.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a knee-jerk reaction when you hear that you play as Pinocchio, mm-hmm. that there's not as much of that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it's not a role-playing game and
it,
that it's
it does know, feel yeah. weird to be Pinocchio with a giant greatsword.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, I'm a small boy.
Like, yeah.
This is not the Pinocchio we are quite familiar with.
Yeah, not at all. And I think that's to its credit. So yeah, what you're saying is like it has a much more narrow focus in terms of the play styles that you can,
yeah.
can attain. But the flip side of that is that they've really tightly made the game around optimizing around those builds.
Yes,
like all the items feel useful. You very rarely pick up an item where you're like, oh, I can't even like imagine how that would help my build because it's for like a magic user and I'm playing, you know, strength guy. It's like every time you get an item, you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Like I could do something like that. And it's even true of the weapon system, which I want to talk about. That's my favorite thing of the game.
It's really cool.
The thing that it does the most.
Yeah. Weapon crafting system is basically you find weapons in the world, and at any point you can disassemble them between a handle and the blade, and then you can mix and match any handle and any blade. And the reason that's cool is because even if you get a massive greatsword and you're a dex build, you're a technique guy who could never use that, you could still take the handle off of that if you like its ability, and each handle has an ability and blade has an ability. So when you mix and match them, you're also mixing and matching not just their stats, but their powers.
Right.
And so you can gain like, oh, you know, I like this chainsaws handle where it allows me to parry with like an electric blade. Well, I'm going to put that on my rapier. And
then
your rapier, you know, you're stabbing forward. I even made it where I made a giant chomping saw blade, but I put the rapier handle on it. So I was stabbing like this. I was stabbing with the blunt end, which makes no sense.
It's so toyetic. Yeah. You know, it's so like action figure. Like there's like Hasbro made those lightsabers a couple years ago for kids, which is like you can swap blades and hilts and make all this crazy nonsense. And like the end result just looks dumb as hell, but it's so fun.
It's a little bit like Tears of the Kingdom in a sense.
Yeah.
Definitely not quite as, you know, playful and modular, but it still is like, You can get creative. You can get kind of silly there. And it's, it does an odd thing here where I feel like a lot of the systems it has are things that we are accustomed to being built into your character. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's your gear, you know, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, the amulets you put on, like having, you know, stats and stuff, that's pretty standard fare for RPGs. But getting this kind of crunchy with what you can do with your specific weaponry, it's cool. And like on top of the mix and match, you can also like alter your handle, right?
Yeah, you can alter the stats of the weapons so that they have like different scaling, which that's not new to the Souls games. Like you know, you want mm-hmm. you want, if you're a technique build, you want the max scaling on technique and stuff. But it is cool. They do like this crank system where you can crank certain attributes up or down, and it allows certain weapon types to be more viable depending on your build. But honestly, I would just encourage, if you're a first time player, like the best thing to do is do what Brian's doing with like a balanced build where you're kind of mixing between everything and trying to be kind of I think they call that a quality build in FromSoft games.
Yeah.
Something like that, where you, in this game, it's called a balance build. Just because it gives you the most freedom. And even if you find a weapon that's got like high technique or high motivity and you're kind of in the middle, you can crank both of those scalings down to be in the middle.
Yeah.
I actually think that's like the best way to play the game, because there's really no downside to being a balanced build, except for maybe you can't be the most efficient with like max technique or max.
Yeah, I did a lot of basically like reacting to what a present problem would give me and come up with a solution based on that. If I was fighting a boss that was basically like blue blood, they call them, right, which is kind of like a cadaver or something like that, which, you know, it's never like truly explained, but it's just like this grotesque thing. Some of them have machinery inside them, some of them don't.
It's like a Frankenstein.
They're
corrupted creatures based on an element in the world. The souls you're collecting, ergo, apparently has some drawbacks, and
they're Bioshocks.
Yeah,
they're Cthulhuian, you know, horrors a little bit.
So like if I was fighting a boss like that, I would swap an amulet that did more damage to somebody like that. If I needed to carry more amulets and I didn't have the weight enough, I would level up my capacity for a little
bit. How heavy are you? Are you slightly heavy?
I'm like 182. I got back from Gamescom recently. I definitely gained 5 pounds there, though. It's just beer and pretzels for 10 days straight. What can you do? I'm working on it, though.
I seem to have got myself in a
pickle here. I wasn't heavy enough where these guys didn't stop grabbing me, though. They do love to grab you. By the end, I was basically like, I could carry everything I wanted to carry, which was awesome.
Without crossing the 80% heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it said slightly heavy and I felt myself getting too slow, I wouldn't do it. Like, okay. I didn't like going into the yellow at all. I always wanted to be quick.
If anybody's listening to this episode and isn't remotely familiar with FromSoft, they sound insane.
Oh God, yeah. God. I mean, this
weight capacity matters a lot in games like these,
because
they determine your roll speed and stuff. And in my experience, I also did what you're doing. I tried to not even make slightly heavy show up, but after a while I was like, you know what? I don't really notice the difference.
Right.
I don't know the difference between like underweight and slightly heavy. And so I just went full into slightly heavy. And as long as you never cross 80%, if you cross 80% weight capacity, all of a sudden you are just the slowest human ever.
It's got this game's got a lot of the FromSoft status effects stuff too, where like you'll go into poison swamps and like you'll go insane. And like there's these like bog creatures that like fart this yellow chemical in the air.
Disruption.
Just drives you nuts.
Disruption kills you immediately, which is my favorite quote status effect.
Yeah.
Because it's not a status effect. It's just you dying. It's just death.
There was
like a curse.
I diagnosed you with death.
Yeah, exactly.
You get shock, which is like a guy will hit you with a blunt object so many times that you just go kind of insane, and it makes your stamina like slow to a crawl.
So bad.
And in a boss fight, you're kind of like, please don't hit me in the head and make me insane. Please don't hit me in the head. And then he does, and you're just like, I'm so tired. I can't do anything. I want to say too, like, this game is really good looking. Like, it's gorgeous.
Surprisingly,
everything about this game was just such a delightful surprise for me. I haven't clicked with a game like this so kind of instantly and immediately. And I felt like the more I put into it, the more it gave back. And you know, like, it's weird. There's another big game that came out recently where that had a lot of debates about being over encumbered and how much do you weigh and all that kind of stuff. And like, I kind of bounced off that one pretty quickly, but this one, I kept coming back to it. I just felt like,
You like the Bloodborne?
Yeah. I mean,
it is a Bloodborne sequel.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's, I feel like there was an era for a while in video games where a company wouldn't make the sequel to the thing everyone wanted to make, so another company would make it, right? Yep. It's how we got Yooka-Laylee. It's how we got Mighty No. 9, which wasn't good. It's how we got, what was the Castlevania like?
Ooh.
Not just Blasphemous, but the other one.
Nacho's Blasphemous.
Nacho's Blasphemous.
Circle of Blood or something?
No, Ritual of the Night? No.
Ritual
of the Symphonies.
It's the one that was Kickstarted.
Yes.
Yeah, it was by the original creator.
This feels like one of those, but like on the successful side of things, right? This is not Bloodborne's Mighty No. 9. This is Bloodborne 1.5. Almost Bloodborne 2. Bloodstained.
Yes. Okay, I remembered it. All right,
there we go.
There's only 70 words that video games can use.
And I know. And Castlevania used 60 of them.
Yeah, all of them.
They had to start making up new ones like Ecclesia.
No, I love that.
Someone in the comments is going to tell me that ecclesia is like a real word.
This has nothing to do with anything, but my favorite part of the game is Geppetto.
Yeah.
Geppetto is a character. He's your dad, your father figure. And my favorite part is every time you talk to him, he tells you to, quote, be a good boy.
Yeah.
And then he sends you on a mission to kill 50 people. Yeah. And I love that part of it for me. He's like,
Did you see the whole thing on Twitter where people are like, did they make sexy Geppetto?
Yeah.
Like, people are like, that's a handsome-ass Geppetto.
That's exactly what my fiance said.
Yeah.
She was watching me play it, and she was like, I would... Yeah, she's pretty good.
Geppetto's the hall pass.
Yeah, Geppetto's the hall pass.
Chris Person, formerly of Kotaku on Twitter, was somebody remarked that it was from South Korea, and somebody was like, oh, I'm surprised. I thought it was Western releasing it. And he goes, the West does not have the technology to make this effable a Geppetto. It's just like, you know, I keep thinking just like, yeah, that's a sexy Geppetto. Just very
sexy Geppetto.
Yeah.
How many incarnations of Geppetto are there? How many times have we seen him?
Well, there's Tom Hanks.
There was like two last year.
Geppetto?
Oh yeah, you don't want to see that.
Yeah, what was live-action one?
There was a live-action Pinocchio.
You're doing great now, Washington.
Oh man, yeah.
You didn't do your research. You should have watched the Batman.
He's a fake Pinocchio fan.
He has an Italian accent for about 7 minutes, and then just says screw it, and just kind of is.
Oh really?
It's really funny,
Travis. They're gonna pull up Halloween costumes of you, like in the when you're not dressed as Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's not a real Pinocchio
fan. Doesn't even like Pinocchio.
No, they made two. I can't believe we're talking about Pinocchio. They made two Pinocchio movies in the last year. One of them was the Disney live action remake, which is one of the worst films they've ever made, and the other is Guillermo del Toro's, which is excellent. And that's stop motion animation, puppets.
I think I saw a commercial.
That one's extremely dark because the first 20 minutes of the movie is Geppetto with his actual son, and you know the son's gonna die, and so they just keep going into all these. It's like, you know, when they were in on the joke with Kenny on South Park, where you were just like, I know he's gonna die in this episode. How's he gonna die? Yeah. And sometimes he wouldn't die until the very end. So with this, like the first 20 minutes, he's just walking around with his kid, and like, you know, they go underneath a tree, and you're like, the branch is gonna kill him. They go through a bridge, and like, oh, the bridge is going to collapse. And eventually he just dies in one of the most horrific ways. And it's just super dark. And then Geppetto's like, I'll make a boy myself.
Wait, so is that part of the story of Pinocchio? Because that's not in the book I read.
It's probably Del Toro just, you know, sprinkling in some tragedy.
Because I think there's some, like, hinting at that in this game, too, is that, like, he made a boy because his son died,
His son died.
So I'm wondering, like, is that... because. The book I read, so my thing was, I opened the game, it says dedicated to this guy who wrote the original story. So I go, okay, well, I'm going to go read that.
Yeah.
And in that story, a lumberjack finds a piece of wood, and he's chopping wood, and the wood screams. And he's like, oh, this is an animate piece of wood.
Oh, that's right.
That's why it's called Pinocchio. It's pine.
Right.
And so he gives that block of wood to Geppetto, and Geppetto's like, okay, this is clearly a boy who somehow got trapped in wood. I'm going to make him because that's what you do, right? Yeah. I'm going to make him a real boy, and then it becomes Pinocchio. That's why he's animate. So that part of, like, his son dying is not really in the original story. And I'm wondering, when did that start? It can't be the Disney animated movie, right? Geppetto wasn't like a drinking alcoholic because his son died in a tragedy. Where did that
start? I don't think he was an alcoholic in the original one.
When did that start? When did Geppetto get so dark?
Jiminy Cricket is a lush, though. That dude is, and he's a crackhead.
It's a really...
I'm putting it out there in the world. Jiminy Cricket does crack.
In this game, they call him Gemini.
Gemini. Gemini crackhead.
Gemini crackhead.
All right.
This isn't going to make it.
Putting together this story, I understand why this would attract someone who's like, we can make a FromSoftian game out of this. Like,
totally.
There's an alcoholic that chops into a crying tree and makes a child.
As far as Liza P go, I've been comparing it to an Impossible Burger, where it's like, oh, they made a, you know, they made a fake meat that bleeds the same as real meat, and it tastes good. And I'm like, we'll see about that. And they're like, we made a Bloodborne like. I'm like, okay. And then an Impossible Burger has like a very distinct kind of flavor to it. And
it's sort of nutty.
And I don't dislike it.
Yeah.
But it's totally its own thing.
Yeah.
And that's what this is with Pinocchio, where I'm like, I'm not mad that it's Pinocchio, but that is never something I would request specifically. Yeah. Like, it's sort of like, okay, Bloodborne with a dash of Pinocchio. okay.
Yeah.
Yes, sure, fine, I'll take it, you know?
They also chose a very interesting one. Like, if I was looking back at old stories, like, you know, Alice in Wonderland feels like it would make a good Souls-like, mm-hmm. or, you know.
We had, you know, Alice, but American McGee's a million years ago.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah, yeah. It's very odd. But anyway, I really like it a lot. My main criticism in the review, and I think this is something that, like, everybody is probably already kind of accepting, is that it doesn't really do anything new. Right. It is just a Souls-like, and it follows the Souls-like script and formula to a T.
Yep.
It's Bloodborne 2, and I think that's fine. But for me, that was where it capped it. You know, in my 9s and 10s, I look for this. They're pushing the boundaries in some major way, or doing something I haven't seen before, or something like that. And you're really not going to find this here. You'll find it in pockets. You'll find the weapon crafting system, I think, is a legit, unique, like, cool new thing. But on the whole, like, if you assumed, oh, this is going to be a Bloodborne-type game with Pinocchio, you're right. That's exactly what it is. And it does it extremely well.
It's a cover album. Yeah.
So,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, obviously Liza P is borrowing heavily from Bloodborne, but there are things that it does uniquely, and I figure we could run down some of
those. Yeah, let's do it.
For starters, blocking. That's a huge one.
Blocking.
You basically can't block in Bloodborne. Not a thing.
Yeah.
You do it now. Also, visual cues for, you know, whatever, visceral attacks, backstabs, whatever it is. It's a lot more, like, if you sneak up behind somebody.
More clear, yeah.
Yeah. There's, I mean, in the...
That I think they took from Sekiro. Sekiro.
Definitely.
That,
yes.
Basically
definitely.
That exact yeah, same totally. System, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in Bloodborne, if you get, you know, a bullet parry or whatever, it just makes this little bike horn squeak where it's like... And it's like, that's when you're supposed to do it. In this case, there's just a full-on, like, their health bar turns white or whatever. You know, it's much more
the stagger you're talking
about.
I
mean, that's another thing. Is there's also, I feel like this, the way staggering works in Bloodborne is there's like an invisible meter. Like,
exactly.
It's secret armor.
It's a lot more user friendly for sure. It's got a little bit of the same clunkiness that a Souls-like has, because I think that's a part of the genre at this point.
Yeah.
But on the whole, it's like, you know, they've learned from games of the past, and I think they learned a lot from Sekiro. I think they learned a ton from Bloodborne, and then in certain areas they put on their own flair and do some cool stuff.
We touched on this, but like the most subtle change that I was talking to my buddy Tamor, who was also like noting this, but like the fact that the color of the souls that you have changes from like white when you're running around and you're just collecting them, and the second you have enough to level up, it turns blue. Mm-hmm. And that is the most basic subtle difference, but it makes a huge difference in sort of how you approach it. Like if you're like, I'm doing a souls run, I gotta level up, I gotta grind a little bit. It's handy. Super.
I also think
they
explain their systems better. There is some sort of like
tutorial.
There's tradition in a Souls-like game to just not tell the player anything.
Yes.
And I like that they forsake that a little bit, because I am not a huge fan of that. And I think it's cool that they teach some of the systems.
I mean, I do love in Bloodborne, they have like little slimy puppets on the ground that leave post-it notes for you, and you go up and they go, like, okay, thanks. This is not a tutorial. This is a scattered user manual.
Yeah.
Travis, the fact that you finished this game and wrote a review for it, and I'm you know, I'm close to the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And
three glasses away.
Yeah, and this is for a game that as of right now isn't out yet.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's out on the 19th, right?
Correct.
That is not something I would have been able to pull off, I think, with like Dark Souls 2 or something like that, right? Which is just so overly obtuse and labyrinthian almost in so many ways, where you're just kind of like, I'm lost here. There's a lot that is crowdsourced when it comes to the FromSoft games. Yeah. The community comes together really well.
I'm sure we're going to see some really cool like weapon crafting.
Yeah,
games.
Yeah.
You know, if you glue this thing to this thing, it'll kill this guy in 2 minutes.
No multiplayer is also
a huge one.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about
it's,
that.
It's interesting.
This guy does suck.
I hate
this. So this guy's ability is, so for those of you who are not watching the visual, it's a big old jester puppet, and it has the most annoying ability in the game, which is it applies a status effect called break.
Yeah.
And break means that all of your healing items do basically nothing. Like they heal you like 10% of what they normally would.
I hate him already.
Yeah. And it's anytime you get somebody with a break effect, you're just like, oh yeah, I'm useless now unless I perfectly
slight tip for that is if there's other enemies in the area, kind of
let them do it.
Yeah, kite them towards him and let him bother them, and then
he's
you know,
the only one in the game, by the way.
Yeah.
You're gonna find more of Jester Boys.
So another This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue.
The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thing. So the big difference when you do drop some souls or ergo or whatever you call it, and it's, you know, there's, it's sitting there, a little glowing blue thing elsewhere on the map, and you got to go back.
I really like this change.
This is interesting, and I'm torn about it because it is an entirely new layer, but it makes it so that the damage you take on the way back to pick up your ergo, it detracts from it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if you know you're like, oh my god, I was just close to getting a level, I left like 16,000 souls or blood bucks or whatever sitting on the ground there, and you know, you're running to get it, and dudes are just, you know, nailing you left and right, and you're just like, and you it slowly goes down. You're like, mm-hmm. Oh, now I have 12,000. And like, if you're, you know, going back to retrieve this thing, if it's left in some horribly inconvenient spot, and you're taking a bunch of damage on the way there, at some point you might just be like, it's a lost cause.
We'll
move on and do something else. And
the flip side of that is that depending on how much ergo you have, you could lose all of your health, fully die, and still have ergo left.
Oh, right.
And so it's not as damaging in certain cases, because if you've just got a ton of ergo, you're always going to reduce that ergo at the same rate. And so it hurts you more because you're going to take damage on the way there and lose some of it. And if you heal, you can double up on how much you lose, right? Because you're losing extra damage.
I don't think I caught that.
When you lose healed damage, basically anytime you get hit, if you fall off a cliff and you lose all of your health, it'll take one full health bar worth of ergo, however much that is
worth.
That's
like an extremely complex little change that absolutely changes the whole dynamic
here. I also think that the checkpointing is fairly liberal in this game.
Yeah, I think so.
And there's only one or two classic FromSoft walk of shame back to the boss type areas in this game where
there's two that really bothered me.
Yeah.
They're pretty few and far between.
Yeah. There was one I was messaging you about yesterday. This big guy you fight, and like, they just make you run up this whole thing and everyone on the thing wants you dead on the way there. But for the most part, I actually I clocked it. I think only twice did I lose enough souls that it pissed me off, or enough ergo that it pissed me off.
So yeah, I love how we all have to learn the verbiage for every Souls-like game.
The checkpoints are good. There's, what is it, stargazers that you set up?
Stargazers, which are bonfires.
Yeah, they're bonfires. The thing that really pissed me off about this is early on in the game, you can level up at those, and then you get to basically Krat Station, which is your sort of hub, and then suddenly you have to go back there to level up.
And then they change it again later in the game.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah.
It seems completely arbitrary.
In like the last quarter of the game, you can level up at the start.
I think they made a decision to make you interact with certain characters because you get story beats out of that. And that, this is something I actually appreciate about the game, which is they prioritize story way more than other Souls-likes, which I think is cool. And I think they take away abilities from you. That way you have to check in with certain characters. And then when you get later in the story and you've advanced far along enough with your relationship with those characters, then they give you the ability back to do it whenever you're at a checkpoint. Mm-hmm. So it is very odd because you're like, wait, I could do this thing and then I can't, and then I can do it again later. But I think it's honestly just they're doing it as a vehicle for like, how do we get Souls-like players to talk to people?
Yeah,
we have to.
The whole, you know, the doll's dream or whatever in Bloodborne I feel like that has to do with the online component. Like it's something where it's just making sure everyone's on the same page. I don't know how that works, but it's again that whole thing where you have to travel back to the dream and level up.
Yeah,
kind of a pain in the ass.
It's like an instance. Yeah.
Instancing. Yeah, but like in this instance, you also can't pause. There's no reason for that. It's not an online game. It's not a persistent thing where people can show up as ghosts.
Becoming more and more common in games, I've noticed, which is a very weird like trait.
I think they were just like, let's do that.
Because it's Souls-like.
Because it's Souls-like. Let's be a pain in the ass about this.
Or maybe they're planning on adding multiplayer.
That's very possible.
We have found some weird things in the game that are unexplained, and I'm sort of been like, okay, is this a DLC thing, or is this maybe they're going to add multiplayer? There's no sign of that in the game right now, either co-op or PvP, but like this game feels like it's made for PvP, to be honest with you. I'm very surprised.
There's one thing we both found that says, like, you can't access this right now, and we're like, well, what is it?
What is it?
Tell us this do.
That's good to know. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it is super smart because this isn't an established franchise. To put it out, get people's attention, you know, if you build it, they will come, then maybe patch in multiplayer later if there's enough of a demand for it. But
here's another pet peeve: you can lock yourself out of side quests by making decisions on which loot you want, which is crazy. Like there's a specific quest that myself and two of the guys working on the wiki all locked ourselves out of the mission because we just didn't know. They make you make a decision on like, hey, do you want this item or this item? And if you choose the wrong one, you can't complete a side quest that's super important to the game.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, what?
You basically like crazy. This doesn't give anything away, but like when you kill certain bosses in this game, they drop like a big chunk of ergo and you can eat it and get your, you know, blood box or whatever, or you can trade it in for an item. And each one of those things works on two different types of items, and it's your decision to pick which one you want. And without really knowing, you can lock yourself out of a side quest from one of the other ones by picking a specific one.
Feels like pretty Bloodborne though.
Yeah.
You can't platinum the game unless you play it like three times or save scum pretty much.
Yeah. There's also like, there's the...
I don't think you can save scum in this one.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, I've tried. I tried myself because I tried to see both endings without replaying through it.
Well, there's the lying mechanic, which is like characters will ask you questions and it's like tick, 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 and you have to pick a left or right choice. And based on the sort of like calibration of those choices, you get one of three endings effectively, right? And there was no real way of knowing. Like they're sort of like morally ambiguous to
a point. They are, yeah. Like one of them's like, hey, should you tell this person the truth about how their friend died, or should you lie and make up a story to make them feel better? And to me, I was like, she deserves the truth. And the game, presented it to me as I made the evil choice.
Right.
I was like, really? I felt like she deserved to know the truth. Like,
there's a lot of white lies, they call them, right?
There are white lies, and it's kind of unclear and morally ambiguous about whether you're supposed to lie, because one of the characters explicitly is like, yeah, you should lie. Like, lying is a nice thing to do sometimes.
Right.
You know, don't tell her that she's fat or whatever. They like tell you to do that. But then there's a separate mechanic where you can see how much lying you've done. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
The portrait.
Yeah.
So that's not really
the gameplay at all. Or
no. Okay. Yeah. So this isn't really a spoiler, but at some point in the game, you get a way to tell how much lying you're doing. And it's a long nose based thing. Your character does not get a long nose. That's not in the game, but there's another mechanic that lets you do it. And you see you can either keep that nose really short or really long, and it's sort of just like a tracker. But so far as I can tell, it's kind of just for fun. Like it didn't really.
I kept waiting for the nose to burst through my donkey mask, but it doesn't actually change on your character.
Yeah.
But it is represented elsewhere.
I checked my nose every level. I swear I did. I was like waiting for it. I was like, when is this thing going to grow out?
So did Jiminy Cricket. Yeah.
I was like, I guess, you know, totally afraid it was going to be one of those, you know, souls like things where you become like hollowed or whatever, and you lose half your health bar, and like red skeletons come up to kick your ass because you've been
I think it's either 100% flavor or it has some invisible impact on the outcomes you can get. But I'll say this, I played the game with no real strategy in mind in terms of when I was going to lie and when I wasn't. I kind of just chose whatever I felt, and I was able to get the best version of the ending.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it worked out. Like you get to make a decision at the end, and
oh, that rules.
Out, yeah.
So other major things that, you know, have an effect on the game that are definitely not Bloodborne. You have items that can affect NPC summons. Like if you are having trouble with a boss, you can make a summon that, you know, the little ghost shows up, and it's, you know, if they do in fact add, you know, co-op or whatever, that's similar option with your actual friend will show up. But in this case, you have, what, these cubes that you crush?
Yeah, it's like a wish
cube. The wishing upon a star reference.
Yeah.
This one. So this is one of the areas that I think, one of the experiments I think doesn't really work out super well. Because the game has no multiplayer, they give you one NPC summon that you can summon at almost every major boss fight. It's not available in all of them, but almost all of them. And when you summon them, you get an item that you can expend, which you have to get fuel for that item using a currency that's time gated in real life, which is very bizarre.
Yeah,
you have to wait for a tree to grow currency, and then you pick the item from the tree and then you spend it.
I love video games.
It's very odd, and so that incentivizes you. If you're like me, oh, you know, I need to go to sleep. Well, I guess I'll leave the game on so that the tree will grow,
right?
And I'll get enough of the material.
You can also buy like booster shots for it and inject it so it grows faster or more.
Are you kidding? I don't know.
No, that's a real thing.
I'm serious. You can fertilize the tree, and then it makes you get the tree. So it's very weirdly set up, and not in a way where I was like, okay, so this will clearly make sense at some point in the game, and it never did. Like it's one of those things where you're just like, they could have just made me spend money on this.
I will say I always had more coins than I ever really needed for it. So it's not really an issue.
It might be dying a ton and you're summoning this guy every single time, 30 times, and I think you're
And as the kids say, get good, my man. Like, yeah, you're gonna have to with your
get good or wait.
Or wait.
But it feels like a very weird. It's like, oh, I can't beat a boss and I'm out of these coins.
Yep.
Oh, I guess I just have to wait for 80 minutes to get enough coins to try again.
Yeah.
That seems really
And so the wish cubes basically apply like a status boost to your specter, who's your NPC.
Yes.
And the one I use a lot was like, you give them just like a burst of extra health. So when you see like they're getting wailed on by a boss, and you're using that boss to, or that NPC to distract the boss so you can kick the boss's ass from behind. When they start getting like real soft, you hit the button and all of a sudden they get a little more energy, and it keeps you in the game a little longer. There's also ones that you can use on yourself. Like it'll increase your stamina. So they don't
That's normal. That makes sense. But I feel like specifically
those aren't very good though.
Yeah.
Okay. It's called a wish, and it's one of the hardest currencies to get. You have to do the coin thing and exchange them for the wish thing. And then once you use a wish, it's a one-time consumable.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, I wish this was better. Like, you know what I mean? Because like one of them is like it heals you. And so far as I could tell, it wasn't really doing that. Like it might be a small chip, or maybe you have to attack to get it, but I couldn't really get it.
Devil's advocate. But because I play so scrappy, there were a couple of times where I was literally on like my last bit of health and I'm reaching into my pockets and I'm throwing all the shit I can. Yeah. Every piece of trash in my pocket, I'm pulling it. Because you have like 14 inventory slots of different consumables and throwables and stuff like that. So at one point, like at the very end of a fight, I was just tossing everything. And I pulled out that wish thing, gave my guy a little more health, pulled out a couple of like oil barrels and, you know, fireballs. And I'm just throwing them. And the boss dropped down and I just jumped up screaming and cheering. I had one of those like classic FromSoft moments.
Is that the swamp boss you're stuck
on? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Nice. I was stuck on on him for like an entire afternoon.
Yeah, I hate bosses like that. Yeah, it's weird because the two people on the wiki, I've asked them, hey, what was the boss you got stuck on? And we all had different answers.
Weird.
Like I said King of Puppets. That was the only boss that like stuck me up for a significant amount of time.
Well,
and somebody else was like final boss and you said swamp. And the swamp, I beat like my first try.
That's crazy.
It's super weird. The people have like issues on completely different bosses.
It makes sense with the different builds and all that.
Yeah, play styles.
But
it reminded me of...
I do a lot better on big, slow bosses.
Yeah.
Technique build, and I think you're a little slower.
With Bloodborne, I remember like I beat Father Gascoigne on the first try and was just like, oh man, that was cool.
Yeah.
And then every single time I played him after that, it was like an hour where he's just
really?
And he's beating my ass through the tombstones and everything. Right. And like I would talk to other friends who were like, oh, I was stuck on him for like 2 weeks or whatever. And like, yeah.
I remember I was stuck on a boss in a Souls-like this week, and then I saw somebody else online beat a boss in Elden Ring, or their goldfish beat it. Did you see that video?
No.
Somebody's goldfish beat a boss in Elden Ring.
Get out of here.
Yeah. So he superimposed a keyboard over the fishbowl, and the fish swims around and randomly hits buttons, and then that input goes into the game.
Shut up.
He had a goldfish beat one of the bosses in Elden Ring.
There's a goldfish.
So if you ever feel bad at a video game,
isn't there a goldfish in Pinocchio?
Pack it up.
The original? There is.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah.
What's his name? Figaro? No, it's a cat. There's a goldfish.
Didn't make his way to the game.
No, he didn't make it here.
He's too busy beating it.
Yeah.
So I want to get over these other things that it does differently from Bloodborne. There's also a skill tree. An actual skill tree, which is like, it's weird to think like, oh, that actually isn't a thing that we have. Like, it's kind of, I almost was sort of thrown for a loop when you unlock that.
It's
in some Souls-likes. There's been one or two that have added skill trees, but I would say it's still pretty fringe. And I would say of the skill trees we've seen, I think this is my favorite one.
Elden Ring didn't have it, right? It had other
Elden
trees.
Ring didn't have it. It was like
several trees in that game.
Several trees. It also had gold trees.
It had gold like trees. It had erd trees.
It's very weird.
Erd trees. It had every type of tree
that you can climb. There's plenty of ladders in this. This is like such a weird, like granular nitpick. Enemies don't follow you up ladders, and you can't do any kicking or punching or healing while you're on the ladders.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I have a lot of very fond memories of Bloodborne, where like a werewolf is like following me up a ladder, and I'm just like kicking him in the face, and I'm like, now get down. And like,
only can they not follow you up ladders, but if there's a big boss that has the ability to jump in the air like crazy, if you lure them down to a lower platform and then climb up the ladder, they won't be able to jump back up.
No.
They can't follow you.
Interesting.
They will.
So it's a way too easy to manipulate. That's one of my main criticisms of this game is I feel like the sections that aren't bosses are like laughably easy most of the time. Like you can manipulate the AI pretty easily. You're just kind of like
at games. I'm having a good time.
Oh, really? Yeah. you can just blow through a lot of the stuff. Like dying in the non-boss fight areas for me was pretty rare.
It's pretty rare. Yeah.
Other Souls-likes.
There's definitely a couple of.
And then when you get to a boss, it's so much harder. You're like, I don't feel like that level prepared me for this at all.
There's a leap. There's a leap.
One thing I noticed, and this is such a, I feel like a, we talk about this game not surprising us enough, the enemies will follow you really far.
Yeah.
Oh, they will.
Extremely funny because I think there's that almost that, you know, that logic of like, you know, Bloodborne or whatever, you just run away.
They're tethered.
Just run away. They'll eventually come to the flight of stairs and be like, I'm not going up there. And then like larger enemies will follow you.
They follow you to the checkpoint.
They'll follow you to the checkpoint, which you then can't use because they'll be like, "There's a big guy behind you. Can't use this right now." And it's like, it adds an extra wrinkle.
Yeah.
But no, the ladder thing is funny because like I have very fond memories of standing at the top of a ladder in Resident Evil 4 with my knife out, just knifing grandpas. You know, they're all falling down and they're like dissolving or whatever they do in that game, turning into grandpa puddles.
Yeah. Gems.
And so I wanted a little bit of that in this game, but I'm like, you know, it's one of those things you learn the language very quickly, and you're like, all right, so if I go up a ladder, no one's going to follow me. Cool. There'll be more psychos up there to kill me, but like that guy down there is just going to be like, oh, well, and walk away because he never learned it, you know?
Yeah.
I love that. Travis, this is one thing you really like. You can collect records because items and
so the music is really good.
The music is so good in this game.
It's awesome.
To the point where when you're working on a review, you usually have to turn the in-game music off to record footage because when they put the video together, if there's music on it, it interferes with the music that the video plays throughout the review, and so you have to turn it off. But this game, I was just like, I'm gonna record all my footage later.
Yeah,
the music is quite good. It does have long sections with no music, which I actually kind of liked aesthetically because it kind of just focuses you in, and then when the music comes up, you're like, oh dang.
Yeah.
But you collect records I still have not found a ton of the records, which is weird.
It is weird.
I've done so much of the game, and I'm on my second playthrough, and I'm still missing a bunch. I'm like, why am I missing so many records?
I think I only have like 5 or 6 out of like 30, and I'm like 99% weighted through.
Yeah, that's where you do find a couple at the end. But like, I'm spending a lot of my time trying to get those records because they're worth it. I definitely want to buy this OST. They give you in-game benefits to listening to the music too.
Huh.
Because there's a whole like, is your character going to be more robotic or is he going to be a real boy? There's like that decision tree.
Oh, right.
And listening to music is one of the things that makes you more human. And so when you're deciding if you want to be a real boy or not, if you want to be a real boy, listen to the records.
All right.
Do a good job.
And finally, one thing to call this out, this might be the first Souls-like with a legitimately good story.
Yes.
Excluding the Star Wars ones, which is...
Yeah, Star Wars ones are better.
They have a lot to build on, though.
Yeah, they have a lot to build on, and it's very clearly like they borrow a lot from the universe and stuff. This has a lot working against it. It's based off of a Pinocchio book that is very bizarre. Just my reading of that book was I was just like, dude, I don't get this book at all. This is super, super weird. Pinocchio gets revived from a block of wood and then he goes on to just be the worst human being for like 15 years. I think it's supposed to be a message about fatherhood. Like, oh, you still love them even though they're super bad people.
Right.
But you teach them empathy eventually. Yes. I think that's supposed to be the message. But, you know, just you're reading a book about Pinocchio just being super disrespectful his entire life, which is a bizarre story.
Which, to be clear, Bloodborne, Elden Ring, and stuff like that, they have lore, right? Which is it's different than story. Like, there's a lot of overlap there, but lore is a lot of like, you know, this is kind of in the back pocket and stuff like that, and you're digging around for it, and it's very rewarding once you find it and you look into it.
If you have to watch a YouTube video to understand it, it's not a story. That's the way I think. That's lore.
I like that.
Yeah. So and this one, you don't need the YouTube video. Like, they do enough exposition, and they smartly do some of it during boss fights. They know that you're going to lose a lot.
Yeah.
So that you have to hear it again, and then eventually you go, oh yeah, I do remember that. Because it wasn't one line of dialogue. Mm. It was said to me 5 times because I died 5 times on that boss. I think that's really smart. And then by the end of the game, you're like, okay, that story made sense. I understand every part of it. I didn't have to look anything up. I didn't have to read any item descriptions. And the story they told, pretty good.
That's
honestly pretty good. Yes. I was surprised.
Really cool.
So, you know, I think there's kind of a good track record for games based on books, you know?
Yeah, like, you're kind of right.
If they take a lot. I mean, The Witcher, for instance. Like, I think... large amount of stuff to work from, and you know, I don't know, movies are too linear. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. They definitely went their own way and told their own version of Pinocchio because it has very little in common, but I love the nods to the original book, and it very much is the original Pinocchio book. So if you just watch the Disney film, you're probably going to be like, I don't get a lot of this, but also there's a big whale in Pinocchio. That's not a spoiler.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you know, I was thinking about this. I was like, where was the whale?
Submarine.
It's a submarine.
That was spoiled for me in a trailer. We totally asked them like at an interview. I was like, oh, so like there's a whale. There's going to be a big whale boss fight.
There's no whale boss fight. And in fact, though, there's not even really a whale enemy. There's like one part where you get on a submarine and you don't even like hang out on the submarine. It's like a cutscene that takes you from one place to another. So I was pretty disappointed in that element. But the nods to the original story, the story that they decided to tell, which is very different from Pinocchio, I think was good. And some of the characters, like I like Vanini a lot.
Yeah.
He makes me want to do a super offensive Italian accent all the time. But he's very
funny. You need pointers, I'm here. My whole family talks like that.
Now, is that real?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, shifting gears, we talked about this. I'm actually so happy that you read Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. I was like thinking, I should do that. That would bring something valuable to the conversation. And you just, not only did you beat the game and review it and play it multiple times, you're like, I'll read a book too. Just
Did you say shifting gears? Because that's what happens to
nice.
The gears Pinocchio are shifting. The game.
Yeah.
Your brain has holes in it. This happens.
That made me feel warm.
Yeah.
Feel
warm.
Something jumped out at me.
You'll get it in a couple weeks.
Guys. Yes.
Play the game.
Something jumped out at me. It is, this obviously we're making the comparison. This is like Bloodborne. It's Bloodborne with Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. But it also hit me that it's kind of a lot of Mega Man.
It is a
lot. Yeah.
Because you are, you know, you play as a little robot boy who is brought to life by a kindly bearded fellow.
He's also sexy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can agree.
Calling Dr. Light sexy?
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
we're all getting older.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Yeah. But yeah, and then you have to go out in the world and fight other bad robots. And the bad robots were assembled by
a
mustachioed man who Vignetti or something?
Vanini.
Vanini, yeah. Like, he's got a little bit of Dr. Wily in the facial hair department, you know? And then you've got an interchangeable arm that has different sort of elemental attacks and energies. And I was like, okay, that feels very Mega Man.
Yeah.
Obviously you have to fight the bosses in order. You can't just go to each of their houses at your own leisure. But I was like, wait, no, is Mega Man just Pinocchio? And like, is Mega Man just Pinocchio? Is that?
I think maybe. I feel like they had to have some sort of inspiration from that.
Like,
right?
It's clearly,
got a lot in common with the idea of.
Does Pinocchio ever get like a dog that he can ride on?
Probably.
Okay.
That's DLC.
Was that in the book?
Is that in the book?
Oh, I meant in the
it comes
the
a donkey, which, by the way, that's what the mask is a reference.
I know, which I loved. Yeah. That's why I wore the donkey mask the whole game, because that's like one of the most horrifying things in any kids movie is like sending a bunch of children to a theme park island where they can drink and smoke cigars and turn into creatures. Like, okay, sure.
Sounds good to me.
I remember being like 5 and seeing that and being like, so I don't want to go to Disneyland anymore.
That was also like a very weird move Disney-wise to be like, here's a film about children being bad and going to a place where everything is fun. Anyway, we have a place where everything is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come to our theme park.
We'll turn into a mouse. I don't know.
No cigars, though. Yeah. You're not allowed to smoke at Disney.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't think so. Not anymore.
I love the sort of the pop cultural. I feel like calling an old Italian book pop culture doesn't feel right, you know, but it is.
But
like
it is like internationally like one of the most. I looked up a bunch of stuff about it when I was reading the book. Like it's apparently like one of the most read books internationally because it's just really ubiquitous and it's been translated into like 30 languages or something like that. So it's one of it's super weird because I feel like kids in America never read it. I don't remember reading it.
No.
I remember kids saw the Disney movie. I'd missed out on the Disney movie until I was like a grown adult, but like kids saw the Disney movie and that's where they knew it from. But apparently it's really well known. And since this is an international game, it was made by a Korean studio. I think maybe they probably have like a translation or version of it that differs from ours.
The other like, you know, big game I think of that's based on a book that's amazing is The Witcher. And Geralt is very much like he's the huntsman.
Yeah.
Like I feel like this kind of gets lost when they go into whole Blood of Elves and like the fate of the kingdom and the time traveling adopted wizard daughter or whatever. But like there's very much like the earliest Witcher stuff is just subverting classic fairy tales.
Yeah.
And it was, I feel like that's a corner that video games are really, it works, you know, like there's a kind of fairy tales are so malleable when it comes to sort of reinterpretation and being like, it's a gritty, edgy version.
They also kind of have a Souls-like vibe to them because all fairy tales are kind of creepy in a weird way. Like I was talking about Alice in the Wonderland and there's some like, you know, Wizard of Oz and these old stories that have like a little of like darkness to them that I think really works for Souls-like. And I feel like they lean on that super hard in this game. And, you know, I could see people drawing inspiration from that, but it's weird. It's weird how much the overlap.
Yeah. Some journalists are saying that Pinocchio is the Dark Souls of books. Sorry, we walked ourselves right
into that. That's in my review. Yeah, that's in my review. You must have read my review.
That's right.
That's great.
Sorry, Max. I mean,
Every now and then,
I hit him with a shovel so hard that it takes him a minute. He's like,
yeah.
You're telling me that you have to give a tree a booster shot is exactly the kind of thing you lie about?
But he's not lying. There's even multiple types of booster shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the game is about lying.
Give the tree some drugs.
That's true.
It's just a video game. Why not? Travis, I want to talk to you about what it's like to review an incredibly hard game on a deadline. Because reviewing a game on a deadline, I always liken it to that part in Matilda where the little boy has to eat an entire chocolate cake in front of the person. And they're like, eat the cake, eat it. You can do it, Brucey. And like, that's video games are supposed to be fun and they're supposed to be enjoyed. And trying to enjoy them with a gun to your head on a tight deadline.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you do that? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, deadlines can be tough, especially if it's like a very big game that you kind of have to get to the credits. That's a rule at IGN. I think it's a good rule. He's showing Matilda.
I can't believe
those who aren't watching video, we're playing the Matilda
scene. Directed by Danny DeVito. Killer movie. Go watch it.
Is it actually directed by Danny DeVito?
Yeah, yeah.
Why is that guy so talented?
He's amazing. I don't know.
He's so good.
Things come in small size.
That's true. Reviewing games can be a little tough. And sometimes you try to put that aside. Like, okay, I understand I'm not playing this game the way that it was intended.
Right.
You're not supposed to just like play more than you want to. Like, you know, I reviewed Hogwarts Legacy and I think I had like 36 hours to finish that game. And I was just like, all right, finish it. I got it done, but you know, it wasn't easy. With difficult games, there's definitely an extra layer because you're worried, like, maybe I'm not good enough to beat this. Like I told you guys, I played a technique build, which at the time I did not know was essentially the hard mode of the game. And there were certain parts where I was like, dude, how am I going to miss the deadline? When I spent like multiple hours on the King of Puppets fight. I was just like, how long? What if I can't finish this fight? Like, am I just not going to be good enough?
I have anxiety just like thinking about that, you know?
It's tough, yeah, because sometimes I just worried about that. But I really like Souls-likes. I think I'm pretty good at games. I'm not going to say I'm the best.
No, you're good at games.
In the world, but I'm pretty good.
You can hang. You're good.
I can hang. I'm good enough to get through it. And the thing about Souls-like is the thing I try to remember is that death is not a fail state in Souls-like. It's actually part of the game. Mm-hmm. Just like you wouldn't get mad about dying in a roguelike because you go, oh yeah, that's part of it, is like you have to start again to get stronger and replay. Souls-like, I think of it the same way, because you really are supposed to die again and again so that you can learn the patterns and then get better at understanding the boss. And then when you go in, eventually it will click. And I'll say that to anybody who is playing this game this week, mm-hmm, and find themselves dying a lot, have a little bit of faith. An IGN reviewer could beat the game. You can too.
Exactly. Right?
And so I think it really is just about sticking to it and not getting deterred. The worst thing you can do in a Souls-like is think that, oh, I'm dying, that must mean I'm bad at this or I'm not good enough or whatever. No, dying's part of it. That's part of the genre.
I'll add to that. If you beat a boss within an inch of its life and then it kills you, you are allowed to get mad.
That is fair.
I had that several times this weekend where I stood up and then just yelled all the words I shouldn't say in front of a five-year-old. Just a lot of...
I had that too.
Just a lot of that.
There was one boss that just kept killing me and I knew I should be beating it, but it was just so... I was just like, why is this thing killing me?
Well, there's the fights in these games where you're just like, I don't know how anyone could ever do this. And then there's the fights where you're like, I'm so close to getting this that it's driving me insane because like, I know I have this in me. I know I can do it. And then when you pull it off, it feels so good.
Yeah, and like half the bosses are not that challenging either, like at least half of them. And so I'd go through and beat it in my first try, and I'm like, oh, I'm the best Souls player ever.
Yeah.
And then a couple bosses later, I'd be like, I'm the worst Souls player ever. Why can't I beat this game?
Yeah, They humble you quickly.
So much of sort of playing Souls games is it relies on, you know, community and, mm-hmm, and like, you know, talking to other people. Do you have like a network of other reviewers that you chat with if you get stuck on something?
No, I don't, because I think it's important to view the game from a perspective of somebody who's not doing that stuff. Like, mm-hmm, is the game like easy to play without Googling things, right?
Right.
I think that's part of it. I actually think that's a positive part of the review, is that you know, when we were all playing Starfield before it was out, a lot of the stuff was really confusing, and our complaints about that were this game kind of doesn't explain things well. Now people are like, what are you talking about? It's all explained on YouTube. And I'm like, we didn't have YouTube. You know, the game doesn't explain things well. So, but I think that's, if you can beat the game before it's out when there's no way to look anything up, I think that's a sign that it was easy to understand. If things get really bad, like it's like, I think the game might be broken bad, then you reach out to the developers. Mm-hmm. And luckily we're able to do that as reviewers and just be like, hey, let me just hit one of the developers up in Discord and like explain to them what's happening in my game. Is this a bug or am I just stupid? Am I forgetting, not understanding something? But I've only had to do that like one time. And when I did it, it was because the game was broken.
Mm. So not this game.
It was not this game. Yeah. I didn't have to do it for this.
No, I was saying before, it was kind of like awesome and a relief to play a game like this before. I had that impulse to reach for my phone anytime I hit a wall. And I deliberately, like, I knew you were reviewing it and I kind of like held back before asking you questions about it, 'cause I kind of liked uncovering the mystery on my own. Mm-hmm. So I will say that, like, if you are playing this game for the first time, resist that urge to go look up a bunch of stuff, because it's mostly pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah,
and I think
is.
You can pretty much, like, you can mainline through this game, and if you get stuck on a couple of fights, you know, a lot of the bosses aren't really like puzzles specifically. Like, there's a couple where it's like, you know,
A couple where there's a trick.
But for the most part, like, you got this. Like, I believe in you.
And I'll say that part of the Souls like experience is feeling like you did it.
Yeah.
Like you overcame, you figured it out, and then you get that sense of accomplishment. And I don't think that's there if you look up like ultimate builds on YouTube and then you do an exploit against a boss and crush him.
I feel ashamed of myself.
Yeah. That's okay.
So here's the thing. This is going to sound completely bonkers. I love these games. Don't like boss fights.
Really?
I don't. So I like the bosses. Mm-hmm. I think they're cool, but I like monsters and stuff, but I just typically get frustrated I will get that eventual yes, I did it. But a lot of the time I'll also be like, cool, I saw what it did. I just want to see what happens next. And like,
totally fair.
I understand that.
Valid criticism of this game, and this is in my review, is almost every boss fight has two phases.
Yeah.
And the first phase often feels like it's just a warm-up phase, and the second phase is actually the boss fight. And so when you die in the second phase, phase and you have to keep going.
You die in real life.
You die in real life. Yeah. When you keep dying in the second phase and you keep having to redo the first phase, after a while you're like, okay, I hate this first phase because it's just wasting my time. I have to do it over and over again. And I do think this game overuses the two-phase boss fight a lot because a lot of times it's like, you're just wasting my time with like this first.
Yeah. Like skip it. Honestly, I got to the point with some of the second phases where I just like was comically fast at destroying the boss in the first phase that it was just like, do we even need to do this? Mm-hmm. Like, I wish, just let me skip it. But Max, I think I understand why you aren't
games.
No, well that yeah. But
obviously
I think that they're antithetical to the real reason you're here to play them. And that's exploring. Yeah.
No, exactly.
Like it's finding I
feel like it's like I read Playboy for the articles. Like, everyone's like, I like FromSoft because it beats my ass, and I'm like, I like to walk around and see what's in the treasure chest.
Cobblestones.
Is that his Pinocchio voice?
Yeah,
pretty good.
I'm gonna be a real boy. No, I mean this game is totally like it's scratching that itch for me, and I love the world. I love checking it out. And again, it's also reminding me that like Bloodborne is one of my favorite games of all time. It's also a game I walked away from for like months at a time because I think it was specifically Bloodstarved Beast and then ROM that I just like, I just was stuck on them. I just hated them. And there's two bosses in there I still haven't beaten in like the DLC or whatever. Like I didn't beat the Orphan of Cause because he's horrible.
I hate that guy.
And also that's the end. Like he's just there. Like you get a cutscene or whatever. And I'm like, I kind of want that trophy. But also, I don't know. I've like had friends come in and they're like, yeah, beat this guy 100 times. And they come in and they die. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are we doing here? But yeah, I mean, I like the bosses. I wish they made more action figures of them. But also
you can play Pinocchio, by the way.
What?
You could play Pinocchio.
Like in the film?
Yeah.
Because you got a huge nose. You don't have a huge nose at all.
Not really.
Yeah. I'm the one with the big honker
it's
over here.
Proportionate. Yeah.
I think it would be weird if Pinocchio was like 7 feet tall. Like he's like, I'm a real boy. Anyway, dude, Travis, thank you so much for hopping on and talking about this game. Everybody, please go watch, listen to, read whatever Travis's review. And I think we can say we recommend Lies of P. In all honesty.
Great. Oh, yeah.
Where can people find you? And is there anything else you want to plug?
Yeah. If you like my reviews, you can follow me on Twitter at TyGuyTravis. If you don't like my reviews, tell your friend, your enemies to follow me. That'll show them. That'll teach them. I'm on Twitter usually. And then I just write for IGN. I do like.
What's your favorite tie right now?
My favorite tie? I've got a whole bunch of Star Wars ties.
That's awesome.
Pretty hard.
Yeah. I have one that has like
one
a little.
For each episode.
Wow.
I've got like, you know, New Hope tie.
I thought you meant like the Disney Plus shows. Mandalorian volume 20.
How many of them have
the child
TIE fighters on them?
A couple of them.
Okay, good.
But that is a great question because I've always wondered why isn't there a TIE fighter like playing into the pun, and I've not found one. Honestly, the Star Wars TIE collection is pretty bad. Like I would expect it to be better.
I respect that you don't. I feel like I've seen you in novelty ties like once or twice, but you have restraint in that.
I have restraint. I'm not crazy. It's got to be a special day.
The ties of tea.
The ties of tea. No.
Wow. It is.
That's a full circle.
Well, that's not. That's just a. It's not a beer can under my desk.
Someone rang the bell to let us know that joke was bad.
My next reviews are Payday 3 and Lords of the Fallen.
Awesome.
So. Oh, real quick, can you? I just want you to plug that that horrible stretch in your life where you reviewed like three of the worst games there's a lot of talk about how we like only give games and movies sevens and stuff that, and like, you know, we generally play games that are good here at IGN, right? Like but some stinkers do get through.
That's true. So like the goal of a review is to be useful to readers, and readers tend to only care about games where there's a lot of hype around it.
Yeah,
those tend to be the biggest games with large budgets, and a lot of those are good,
which have been play tested
They've been playtested, and that's why a lot of our reviews get high scores. That said, though, that doesn't mean that we're unwilling to give reviews scores that are lower than that. Obviously, we don't like it when games are bad. We'd prefer if they were fun because that's better for everyone. But sometimes you got to warn people about stinkers. And I gained a reputation for a while of being the guy who reviews bad games. I have a really hard time saying no to a game review. To me, I think of it like an attorney, everybody's got a right to a defense. Like, to me, every game has a right to get its time in the public forum where people, the peers, I consider myself a peer of the readers, get a chance to say, hey, here's whether we think this is worth your time and money. Right.
Yes.
I think that's super important. So when somebody says,
also, Travis, you're sort of dressed like a lawyer. So I buy.
So when somebody says, Travis, do you want to review a game? I go, yes, I don't even need to hear it. As long as it's a game I feel knowledgeable enough in that genre to be able to speak informed, I'll review it. And sometimes sometimes
you're like Chris Evans when Netflix calls.
Yeah. That's right.
We have a new movie coming out. It's made entirely by Midjourney. Don't even finish the sentence. I'll be in it.
I'll do it. Yeah. So I have a habit of saying yes to every review, which has bit me before. But yeah, I did review a while. It was Nerf Legends.
Oh.
Terrible game, shovelware made by a company to trick moms. And
shovelware, that's the thing. That's like, you don't even hear that word anymore, because I feel like a lot of that got funneled after the Nintendo Wii, that got funneled right to mobile.
Exactly,
right?
But this one was like clearly made to predatorily convince moms to buy it for Christmas. It came out right before Christmas.
Oh, man.
And I saw a lot of people in the YouTube comments either saying, thank you so much, I almost bought this for my kid, or, oh no, I bought this for my kid. So like, that was like the main thing. So those.
What did you give that game?
A two. Yeah, which is painful. At our
painful
on our scale.
That's what Nerf is supposed to not be. It's
exactly.
Not hurt
it's
you
supposed to be. It managed to turn something as cool as Nerf into one of the worst games. And then I did the same thing for like Crossfire X. I reviewed that game, which was
an
Xbox exclusive port of a very popular game that was just a disaster and actually shut down shortly after my review. So that game is no longer playable. And then I've still continued to give occasionally some bad reviews. This year I reviewed a Testament, Order of High Human, which was also 2 out of 10.
Oh my god.
Really, really rough game that just takes a ton of your time and doesn't function properly. Oh. It has a thing where you can see developer objects in the world. Like, you know, the checker gates that they put up to the, like, you can see those in the game.
What wizard is this?
Yeah, it's brutal. It's a pretty brutal game, man.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that we got a nice, good review for, or a great review.
A great review. It's a great game.
Awesome. We got to have you back on, definitely to talk Lords of the Fallen, maybe to talk Mayday. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see. Travis, thank you so much. Brian. You did very well today. You may help yourself to one of the prizes in the prize cabinet. Everybody else, thanks for watching, listening, and stay tuned for whatever happens next week. We'll be back. See you then. Beyond.
Beyond. There he is.
The dog is no more.
Perfect outro. We're good.
Thank you so much. That was a
blast. I like it. He opened one eye right at the end.
That was awesome.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.